Hello, listeners. Before the show today, just wanted to let you know that we have cut this episode up into two parts. So today you will be hearing the top 10 matches of the year. If you want to hear the top 10 wrestlers, and let's be honest, of course you want to hear it, that is going to drop on Friday morning. So also make sure to check your inboxes as soon as you're done listening to this episode. That means not like your physical inbox, not your mailbox as some people would call it, but your email inbox, because the winners of our contest will be announced that way. One winner will have their golden ticket, if you will, in their inbox after this episode. The other one will have to wait until after Friday's episode. So keep checking in. Check your inbox. Make sure that it's not in the spam folder, because we want to give you some free stuff. All right. Enjoy the show.
Dark, drinking beer and smoking cigarettes after hours in Grove Park, and I am nervous, I'm sweating so badly, I want so badly.
Welcome, fair listeners, to Much Ado About Wrestling, the show where we firmly believe that pro wrestling is the modern version of ancient Greek theater, and we don't care who knows it. I'm one half of your scholarly presenters, Andrew Terrence Caberline, and with me, as always, is Sir Tyler Ward. Tyler, how are you?
We're back, baby!
We're back. It's been a little while.
It's been a little bit.
And it's not just because the wrestling as of late has been unnoteworthy. It's because we've been busy.
Well, that has been a thing, unfortunately. But no, we took our nice little end of the year post-WrestleMania vacation. We got the votes in on the surveys we were doing. And we are ready to get back on that horse. Talk about some wrestling.
Yeah, that's going to be a majority of the episode today, is us revealing who you and us. I don't know how grammar works.
We know wrestling, not grammar.
Yeah, exactly. But we'll be going over our top 10 wrestlers of the year and our top 10 matches of the year. You might be asking why we're doing that in May, and it's because, according to us, the wrestling calendar begins the day after WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. So for us, this is kind of like the beginning of a new wrestling year.
I enjoy that we do this. The only trouble I've had is like trying to describe it to people and being like, oh yeah, so we want you to vote on your best matches, your best wrestlers of 2017 to WrestleMania 34/18.
Like, yeah.
No, yeah, so it was good. We actually got a lot of turnout for the votes. Mm-hmm. We definitely want to thank all of you guys for listening and voting. It turned out much better than we could have possibly expected. And we're gonna reveal the results today.
Yeah, and I can tell that you guys all took it seriously, except for one guy who, instead of picking top 10 wrestlers, only picked The Undertaker for everything. So I appreciate that was fun, but everyone else took it really seriously. The way that we weighted the votes is going to be a mystery to you all. But I assure you that the results are not gimmicked. There are matches and wrestlers who Tyler and I did not vote for in our top 10 that made it into the top 10. We'll talk about them all as my cat attacks me. He's a big heel. He's a big old heel. But we are going to go over the lists. You all got to pick your top 10 in each category, as well as your top one. Tyler and I each listed our top 10s in order. So our votes got a little bit more weight. But again, there were some people that you guys voted for that we did not. But we will talk about that as we get into them. So we're going to start then with the matches. Okay. So top 10 matches, and what would you say we were looking for in a top 10 match, Tyler?
I mean, my grading scale for a good match, it's a few things. Number one is story. You got to have a great story going into it. Now, to preface that doesn't have to mean that it is a long story. It doesn't need to be a story told over months or years even or anything like that. some great wrestling storylines are told weeks beforehand. Some great wrestling storylines are told in the match. Like, and for me, that's usually the number one. Number two, of course, the in-ring work. I'm a big fan of just like in-ring work in terms of actual wrestling prowess. And I think it's easy to have like a great match that is all story driven, but it's much more difficult to have a great match where you don't really have a story, so you have to make it up by just being great wrestlers. People like AJ Styles comes to mind. Like, dude could wrestle a broom, and it would be incredible.
AJ was in a lot of matches that got really close to being in our top 10, but we will reveal if he actually had any that made the top 10. I think we're kind of on the same page. I'm looking for matches that it's like expectations versus outcome. Like, it's way easier to get a memorable, a weighty feeling moment at a show as big as WrestleMania, but you certainly did not need to be at a show that big to do it.
The third criteria that I like to think about, and it's in a weird way, it's not that important to the match, but it's also so important to the match, and I think that's the crowd. The crowd receives a match and how they are enjoying it really affects how you perceive the match is going, I think.
And you see that in a match that didn't make our top 10, but I want to point out as one that I think is a great great indicator of that is the beach ball match was up from this last year, got close to the top 10, did not make it. But that's one where an audience's rebellion caused the performers, Cesaro in particular, to rebel in a way that swung everybody back the other direction. So that's the kind of stuff that we're looking for. So should we might as well just hop into the top 10 then.
Let's get right into it. Number 10.
Number 10. So number 10 took place at SummerSlam this past year at the Barclays Center. This was a match that just snuck into the top 10, beating out the match before it by one convoluted point. This was the Fatal 4-Way for the WWE Universal title between Brock Lesnar, Braun Strowman, Samoa Joe, and Roman Reigns.
And look at how Strowman just with ease picked Lesnar up on his shoulder.
I don't think Brock Lesnar has ever been manhandled like Braun Strowman's doing right now.
Lesnar pulls the table! A running power slam through the table!
Tell you guys.
This is one that you did not put any votes on, Tyler, correct?
I did not vote for this match. I remember watching this match, and I do remember enjoying it. I think this match, for me, it was how some people call a lot of matches that don't have much of a story but a lot of action, they call that a spot fest. To me, this was the WWE version of a spot fest.
I agree with that.
Four big, burly dudes to just cause destruction in the ring. I think they broke every table at ringside. They might have broken another one. Somebody pulled from under the ring. Like, it was just carnage.
Braun Strowman buried a guy with the table.
Yeah.
Quite literally. This was a match that I think succeeded because the rest of the card was also disappointing. There wasn't a whole lot of great matches on that very big SummerSlam card. And going in, you looked at it thinking that it was going to be maybe the best pay-per-view of the year. It really wasn't, but this main event really held the audience's attention from beginning to end. And it is really tough to put a bunch of similar people in a match. All four of these guys are gigantic dudes. Even Samoa Joe, who's smaller next to the three of them, is a giant in any other circumstance. And this was WWE at its like mainstream best, I think, showing that those kind of matches still can work when you really plot them out.
And also, I mean, I don't think it was a very long match. I mean, I don't remember, but
it wasn't terribly long. There was a lot of like, they had to, I was going to say the best that Brock Lesnar's been used, I think, since returning, and about 10 minutes into that match, he gets power slammed through two tables and buried in another one, and it's kind of a lot of the time in the match is used to kind of get him to the back, and then he makes a return.
This is a match where I think people felt like the title was going to come off of Lesnar. Mm-hmm. So it made, even though it didn't in the end, it made every false finish feel like the end. So to your point earlier, Tyler, the reactions from the crowd on every kick out on a two, I think really pushed the energy of the match further and further forward.
Yeah.
And this is a rare case too. When you have four people who are monsters against each other, you feel like someone is going to have to look weak, which can be the death of these characters. And somehow at the end of this, all four people came out looking strong. I think this is like a this was like a good like race car movie. This is like a good Fast and Furious movie.
Yeah.
You're like I think I had a lot of fun when I watched that. Couldn't tell you what happened.
I think I had a lot of fun. Yeah, that's a very great comparison.
So should we go on to number nine then?
Number nine.
This was a match that you had very, very highly rated, Tyler. It was also on my top 10 list.
Also, I'm unaware of what the actual rankings ended up being. Andrew is the only one privy to that information, so this is all a surprise.
People have been asking me, and I've been saying no. People are trying to hack into my emails. I'm like, nope. I'm keeping this list locked down. Mm-hmm. This was a recent match. I'd say about half of the matches on this list were from like the last 2 months. Mm-hmm. And this was a this is one of only two tag team matches that is on our list. And this pitted the Golden Lovers against the Young Bucks at New Japan Strong Style Evolved.
I want Kenny.
I would say his animosity towards Kenny Omega and everything that's transpired is stronger than the pain in his low back.
Oh man!
You got some umbrage with this being number nine. I feel like.
So I mean, it's no secret I'm a very big fan of Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks. I'm all for everything that they are doing right now in the professional wrestling world. And especially the Golden Lovers reunion storyline in New Japan. I wasn't a follower of New Japan probably before about a year and a half ago, like many people. But since then, I have done my darndest to take up as much of it as I can. And the Golden Lovers storyline is one that I really enjoyed. And it's a storyline that I now go to show people who aren't fans of professional wrestling why professional wrestling can be an amazing medium to tell stories. Because the Golden Lovers, a storyline told over a decade now about these two guys who like began as friends and they drifted apart and then they each had their own success and now they come back together. Like it's an amazing story. Now, the problem that I have with this match being ranked number nine on our list is... personally, and yes, there is a bias. I do love the Golden Lovers. I love Kenny Omega. I love the Young Bucks. This, when I saw this match, it very well might be the best tag team match I've ever seen.
Oh, wow.
Which is why I ranked it so high on my list. I believe I ranked it third best match of the year.
Your third best match of the year.
And
yeah.
It was a long match. It was, around a half hour.
It was like 40.
Give or take, maybe
it was right under 40.
And like the story they told, the spots in that match, like I have not seen a better tag team match than what I saw there. Like it was just perfection.
I think what makes this match different from other Young Bucks matches, because I think they get, whether you're a fan of them or a detractor of them, you would say that their identity is to do a lot of spots, to do a lot of athletic showcase, for better or for worse. And this match felt different than a lot of their other ones because there was infighting between themselves. There was infighting between the Golden Lovers. This was almost like a wrestling rom-com in a way.
It really was.
These two teams didn't want to be facing each other. These are like friends who now have picked like different friends. And and it's interesting to see Matt Jackson in particular of the Young Bucks being on a totally different page than Nick Jackson. And there's this table they set up at the beginning of the match. Matt keeps setting it up and getting Kenny on it, and is like telling Nick, like, come on, you gotta hit him through the table, and he doesn't want to, and then it breaks up. And at the point in the match where the Young Bucks have the best opportunity of getting a pin and winning, I believe it's Kota who's in the ring laid out, Matt's on the turnbuckle. Instead of doing what the smart thing would be to win the match and do an aerial move onto him, he instead goes for Kenny on the table. Mm-hmm. And from there on out, they never have another shot at winning. And it's, that is like a really beautiful thing.
Yeah, yeah. There's so many amazing like spots in this match that were just storytelling devices. My absolute favorite mm-hmm. spot of the whole match was Kenny had Matt Jackson up for the one-winged angel, which is Kenny's finishing move. Mm-hmm. It's basically a setup where he has his opponent on his shoulders, and he would just like slam them down forward. And so he has Matt Jackson up and he's holding it there, and the crowd is popping very loud because they know like this is the one-winged angel. This is it. If he hits this, the match mm-hmm. is over. And he reaches up to grab Matt by the neck to pull him down, and then he pauses. And like it was just enough pause where you could see the inner turmoil of him being like, ah, this is my friend. I can't do this to him. So he drops his arm and he just kind of stands there. And Matt reaches down, grabs Kenny's arm, pulls it up and puts it on his neck. And he's like, do it, just like screaming. Yeah. And like, it was such a, if you saw that anywhere else, like you'd be like, ah, that's a little like cliche or a little dramatic. And it was, but like, it just, man, it worked so well, and it evoked such emotion out of me personally. Mm-hmm. Like, that was my favorite spot of the entire match.
And that spot is right at the end, but it runs through the end because then Nick comes back in over his fallen brother and is doing the whole, like, what did you do?
Yeah.
Why did you do this to him? And Kenny is unsure of what to do, and it ends up, I think it's significant that the pin that he gets is a double pin, in that Kota has to kind of reassure him and also get on top of him. Two more things I want to say about this match before we got to move on, because otherwise this podcast is going to be forever long. Two things. It also features my favorite rivalry throughout this year, which is Matt Jackson versus his back.
Yes. Oh my God.
That is like such an interesting, this back injury that he has had for like half the year now, and
which
that prevents
done,
him from doing a lot of his offense.
He's done incredibly selling. It's the storyline mm-hmm. he's carried throughout match to match to match, and like it is amazing how he's done that. People who criticize the Young Bucks as not, you know, never selling moves or anything, like this is an injury that he's been selling for months. Like, it's incredible.
Yeah, yeah. I think this match actually does have a good amount of selling. There's a few moments of like really like hurried, furied offense maneuvers, but I think most of the stuff that lands tends to get sold. Mm-hmm. Although I will say this has, I think, the scariest moment in wrestling this year. Mm-hmm. And this isn't a positive for me in this match, is mm-hmm. the maneuver where Kota and Kenny are bringing Matt up for a double superplex.
Oh, yes. And, wow.
Yeah. And they don't time it correctly to both lift him up at the same time. And mm-hmm. Matt begins to lean the wrong way out of the ring,
to
where
the
he would have brought.
And at this point, he's about 15, 20 feet in the air.
Yeah. And all their body weights go in the wrong direction. And Kota Ibushi makes an amazing save by grounding his legs,
puts his
like
foot
his
on the
right
ring post, and
just corrects the direction that they're all going. That's a really scary moment.
And that's a moment too where if you watch the match, you can audibly hear the audience gasp. And it's not that you want moments like that, but it's moments like that that show you how invested the crowd is in the match. Like, they are mm-hmm. watching every second of it, and they're picking up even on little things like that. Yeah, it was an amazing match.
Right.
I'm a little sad that it's not a little lower on the list, I guess, but definitely mm-hmm. worthy of being top 10.
Oh, absolutely. I think you're going to be upset because number 8 is also a tag match. I'd said there were only 2, but there are 3 tag matches on our list. But number 8 is also a tag match.
Number 8.
Yes, number 8. Also tells a story that's different than the normal matches between these tag teams. Number 8 was from the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, and it was a Hell in the Cell match between the Usos and the New Day.
What else?
New Day wasn't alive. Oh.
You gotta be kidding me.
That a gong?
Why not? There's another new octopus here in Detroit. How have we not seen that yet?
Only a few minutes into the match.
Chuck Barris.
Oh! I remember that match. That match was incredible. It was, and I love that match because for me personally, it felt like a turning point in the feud for the New Day and Usos, where we've known that the New Day and the Usos are both great tag teams in their own right, and the feud they had been doing, not that it was bad, it didn't feel that exciting. But this match was the first time where we really got to see the brutality that these two teams could show, because the Usos, they since they've made their heel turn, they are more hard, more of a brutal team. But they still hold...
Yeah,
they hold a little bit of the comedic side, and the New Day is just a comedy act personified. But we know they're great wrestlers. And this was the first match in a long time where we got to see the New Day, like, put in a really brutal situation. There was the spot where the Usos had Xavier Woods like either handcuffed or something to the ring post.
Yeah, he was handcuffed, and they put the handcuffs over the top of the turnbuckle.
Yeah, so he was hanging
outside.
And they were just giving him shots with those kendo sticks. Ooh.
Yeah. This match was sinister.
It was, maybe the
best way to put it, because it's as violent as you can get without there being any blood in this match, and it's because I think a lot of the situations where someone's going to get hit by a weapon are not out of nowhere. They are calculated, and you get to see these people who are normally like good guys or at least like goofy really be like psychopathic.
Yeah.
That it has what I think is... in like a kayfabe sense, I think the smartest thing that anyone's ever done in a Hell in a Cell match, I think, is in this one. And it's when the team of Big E and Xavier Woods take like 10 kendo sticks out from underneath the ring and put them through the chain link fence in a corner, basically putting one of the Usos in prison. Subduing him. Yeah.
The prison spot. I did like that one. It was... it was a clever spot that like you didn't see coming, and I think in any other situation like it might have come off as a comedy spot, but it was done very well.
It was brutal to whichever Uso it is who sells it. I'm sorry, I can never tell them apart. Still, whichever Uso sells it leans his face into it, so it looks like it's like cutting his mouth, which it's not.
No.
But that makes it look great. Every segment. Even though he's not officially in the match, Kofi Kingston plays a great part in this because he's on the outside, and any time that they have these long build up to brutality, like hitting Xavier when he's being suspended in air, they get to look at Kofi and taunt him the entire time. And Kofi does some great selling in the facial in this match. It also has Hell in a Cell matches, I think, sometimes they're better in theory than in practice because there's literally not a lot of space between the ring and the cell, which is even harder for like a tag team match like this. But somehow these two teams played that to perfection. The suicide dives are some of the most gnarly looking ones ever.
One of the better Hell in a Cell matches I think I've ever seen. It was, and again, like my biggest thing was just that this match really turned that entire feud around, where after seeing this match, I felt big, like renewed, invigorated. I was like, I want to see more Usos versus New Day, because that was incredible. And then they also went on to put on even greater matches. Like,
We got in Battleground and at SummerSlam were both really good.
I think New Day versus Usos was definitely one of the top feuds of 2017.
Yeah, and I think that's why this match is as high as it is on our list. I don't know if it is like one of the top 10 best matches, but I think that every match in that feud was so good, and this might just be the standout one from that.
All right.
Moving on to number 7.
Number 7.
From a little bit of violence to some even more violence, this is a recent match. This is the ladder match for the inaugural NXT North American Championship, featuring a wide cast of characters, Ricochet, Adam Cole, Lars Sullivan, Velveteen Dream, EC3, and someone I'm leaving out.
More.
Killian Dane. Killian Dane is also in there. Ooh, boy. Andrew doesn't have his notes in front of him, as you can tell.
That was an amazing match. This match, I think it was another one of those matches that felt very kind of Fast and the Furious-esque, where we're just going to put a bunch of these incredible names, these amazing stars, in a match that allows them to just cause destruction and havoc, and let's see what happens. Mm-hmm. And it was incredible, honestly. First, I have to start, man. How good does that NXT North American Championship look? I love that.
It's beautiful. It's so unlike every other title that WWE has, which, like, that's become their issue, is that all their titles look the same, and this one couldn't look any different.
I love that belt. I want that belt to be, like, the top prize in NXT now. It looks so good.
I think it could. I mean, I was going to say that this almost reminded me of an ECW match, and an ECW for a long time, the TV title was really the draw instead of the heavyweight title. And I could see that happening.
Yeah, I'd like to see either that or like it take like a IWGP Intercontinental title sort of role, where it's a title that generally is seen as secondary to the heavyweight championship, but at the same time can be held on the same level, if not higher, on the card. Beautiful titles aside, this was an incredible match.
Who was your favorite? Who do you think was the MVP of this match? We know that Adam Cole won it, but who was the MVP of this match?
It's tough. I want to say Adam Cole, just because the storyline that they told throughout the entire event of TakeOver New Orleans involving the Undisputed Era, I think, was masterful.
They were the standout.
They were the standouts of that entire show, and that included Adam Cole winning the ladder match, becoming the first ever NXT North American champion. So I would probably say Adam Cole was the MVP of this match. However, a special place in my heart definitely goes out to Velveteen Dream. He had an amazing run where he was just dropping elbows on everybody. He had the great elbow from the top of the ladder spot.
He really did some reckless abandon in this match. Yeah. He was in so many bumps. This also had more bumps than any other ladder match that WWE has done in a long time. Just like, I think maybe because they didn't have as much time as they wanted, or maybe they got like a few minutes cut right before.
Mm-hmm. It was a long match, but I think for the stipulation of the match, it wasn't that long. It was about 31 minutes. But again, for a 6-man ladder match, that's not a lot of time at all.
No. I also want to point out the great editing from the camera crew for what I think isn't actually like a great spot, but is made great through editing, is Ricochet jumping from out of frame, into someone climbing up the ladder and stopping it. Like, I don't know how that hasn't been done before.
Yes.
Also, I'll point out, I think maybe Ricochet makes the best immediate high spot debut since Rey Mysterio jumping off the cage his first night on SmackDown, where Ricochet gets in the ring and immediately hits that springboard shooting star press.
Yeah. And then he had that huge spot where he was climbing up on the ladder. He was almost on the top rung, and I'm not sure who was flipping it, but someone began to flip the ladder, and so he backflipped off the ladder outside of the ring onto a couple guys outside. It was like, it's amazing that in his first match, like we people who, you know, are follow indie wrestling and stuff, we know Ricochet is known as like one of the best high flyers in the world. But I love that people who maybe don't know Ricochet, this was the first thing you got to see of his work. And he's pulling off incredible stunts like this.
Which is kind of how it was for Rey Mysterio, too, coming back after that, like, few-year-long layoff.
Yeah.
I think it's easy to get people who don't watch wrestling to watch wrestling with a ladder match like this, because I think it's just stunning. I think I'm willing to call this the, like, American Ninja Warrior of wrestling matches, where it's like you hear it pitched to you and you're like, I don't think I'm gonna like that, and then you watch an episode and you're like, well, this is what I'm doing all day.
Yeah,
is watching this.
It was definitely a great match, and I think it's a match where, like, it's when we heard the card and was like, these are gonna be the people in the match, I think everyone kind of knew, like, man, that's gonna be an amazing match, and it not only lived up to but surpassed that hype. That's always a great feeling.
The next match on our list had a lot of hype to live up to, and I think that it did that.
Number six,
from Wrestle Kingdom 11. 12? 12. from Wrestle Kingdom this year. This was Alpha versus Omega. This was Kenny Omega versus Chris Jericho.
Great counter by Omega. Look out! Look out! Jericho's gonna hold on! Oh, the chair is still there! The chair is in the ring!
I'm gonna let you start this one.
We're stunned into silence from this. No, while this is at number six, and while the match itself was really good, I think it was definitely helped by its build. I think this is maybe, I'll say this was the second best build for a match this year. We got to see a different side of Chris Jericho, a different character of him than we'd seen in a while. The press conferences are masterful. We've gone over them on the show before. This, I think, is going to be we're gonna use some SAT analogies here. The Hogan and Mr. T main event of WrestleMania 1 is to WWE's long-term success what Kenny Omega versus Chris Jericho will be to New Japan Pro Wrestling's long-term success. I think that this really opened them up to a different market in a way that they couldn't get into before. I think that, you know, if they continue to trend upward, I think this will be the match they look back at as like, oh yeah, this is what got butts in the seat, you know.
I'll be honest, in a weird way, this was a match I wasn't that hyped for. Don't get me wrong, I love Chris Jericho. I think Chris Jericho is easily going to go down as one of the best performers of all time. When I had heard this match was going to be happening, I wasn't that excited for it just because I felt in a small way that we were being robbed the chance to see Kenny Omega versus, you know, another Okada, Kenny Omega versus Naito, like the chance to put on another Mac classic like they had the previous year. All of my expectations were just completely shattered when this match happened. Again, this match had an incredible build. And again, it's another testament to how good Chris Jericho is. He is so good at redefining his character an infinite amount of times, and it's never boring. Mm-hmm. Like, this was a Chris Jericho we had never seen before. He came back as, like, this grizzled old, like, gunslinger who just, he was brutal and, like,
angry.
Yeah. Like, he showed up and he's cutting Kenny Omega open. Like, that's the first time you really see blood in New Japan in quite a while. It was great to see. And then they went on and put on an amazing match, 5-star match rated. Chris Jericho, I mean, I don't remember if he's had a 5-star match before. I'm sure he might have somewhere.
I feel like he has a lot of fours and a lot of like 4.5s.
But an incredible match, and a lot of people have said like this is the best match Jericho's ever had. And he's what, 47, 48? Like,
he's old. don't hear that, Chris, and get mad at me. the thing is, I had that same reservation where I was like, I don't know if Chris can keep the same pace that makes Kenny so special. But I don't think Chris ever had any intention of doing that.
No,
that's what
not
we
at
saw.
All.
It was like, oh, it's not a match so much as a like all out brawl. And it was good because I think the reservation then was like, well, maybe it will just be like a WWE styled match, which wouldn't look right on New Japan's biggest pay-per-view of the year. And they didn't do that. They did like an old school 70s, like bloody chaotic
match. Yeah. Another testament that Chris Jericho is smarter than all of us when it comes to wrestling. Like, no one is going to have the wrestling IQ that Jericho possesses.
No, and like the chaos that ensued when they went through the tables on the side and like knocked all of the communications equipment out, mm-hmm. and like the feed was dead for a while. Like, that was all great, and I don't know if that was particularly planned to be that way, but it made it feel like this was a match that was out of control. Red Shoes as a referee is really good at making certain matches feel like they're no longer in his control, and I think that really helped this match feel almost like insulting to the Japanese style.
Chris Jericho attacking the young boys, like, that's always
that was great,
enjoyable. I mean, it was definitely a great match. It was quite a long match. It was actually the longest match on the card. It was 34 minutes and 36 seconds. The closest match to that was the main event, Okada versus Naito. It was 34 minutes and 26 seconds. So
I didn't realize they were that close.
They were super close. A testament to that, at Chris Jericho's age, he's been doing this for over 20 years. I mean, it's just incredible. I really enjoyed this match. I didn't have the highest hopes for it, but when you're surprised in that way, where something can exceed your expectations, much like the ladder match for NXT, I mean, all the better.
Yeah. We're going into the top five now.
Here we go.
I said that the build for Omega Jericho was my second favorite build of the year. The match at number five, I think, had the best build of the year.
Number
the best
five.
Story going in. Number five was at NXT TakeOver New Orleans. It was the main event, no title, unsanctioned match. We got Gargano and Ciampa.
No! Oh my God. Oh, Gargano able to escape. Gargano now looking for revenge on Ciampa.
No!
Oh my God, onto that exposed clap.
Former best friends, former DIY, finally settling their score in the middle of the ring.
Yeah, man. Ooh. Another perfect example of wrestling telling incredible stories over years. Not even like a month-long thing. This is a story easily told with the past 2 years. It's just incredible how they executed it. We already know, I mean, Johnny Gargano in the past several months has proved that he is a top-tier performer when it comes to in-ring work.
Yeah.
And Tommaso Ciampa might be the best heel in the world today. Like, God, he is so good. but yeah, this match was great.
There were a lot of little touches like that really added to the aura around this match. Ciampa coming out to no theme music was
I love that. And he's keeping it now. Like, that's his new gimmick. He just walks out to the booth.
Yeah.
It's so great.
And that's fantastic. We've seen that these two guys can work a lightning quick pace and put on like a technical classic. And I think people thought maybe this would be like that. And they really didn't. They really slowed it down. It did like way before our time kind of match. One of those matches where 10 minutes in, they both seem so exhausted they can't stand up. And they held that throughout the end. And again, like another match that's good at being brutal without a whole lot of blood. Any of the blood that was in this match was kind of accidental. Ciampa's eye gets closed by the end of it. But this has, I think, a spot that I don't know if it is the most painful spot that anyone did this year, but it looks really painful, is the exposed cement
powerbomb off the apron.
Yeah, and they build that up great. I mean, they let you know that that spot's gonna that spot on the floor is gonna be exposed for a long time. I think it says a lot too about this match, that the respect that other wrestlers had for the build of this match, because if you go back and watch it, so many main roster superstars are in the front row and came out just for that match.
Oh really? See, I didn't even see that.
Yeah, in a really weird way, you can see that Bayley and Sasha Banks are sitting together watching the match on a corner, which is weird because they were in a rivalry at the time to be paid off at WrestleMania the next night. But they're there on the side. Shane is there
NXT's
with his
not
family.
Canon,
and
it's okay.
No, it's not canon. They're their friends.
But
I think that this was maybe the most anticipated match of WrestleMania weekend by any non-mainstream people.
And I was happy that this match main evented the show. I'm a traditionalist when it comes to wrestling, where I think your top title should always close the show, because there's no better way to show the worth and the weight of that championship by making it the last thing you get to see. There are very, very few situations where I believe that a match deserves to be the main event, and this is one of those situations. Don't get me wrong, I love the NXT Championship with Aleister Black and Andrade Cien Almas. That was great. But this was a match where the story had been built up for so much longer, and there was such anticipation to it that this had to be the main event, and I was so glad that it was.
Yeah, and I think that they made the right decision, because I think it would have been a disservice to Black and Almas. I think people would have been exhausted.
Oh, yeah,
if
absolutely.
That had gone on
last.
Nothing
could have followed this match.
And I think, conversely, that Ring of Honor made the incorrect decision simultaneously in the same city by having another blood feud in Kenny and Cody and not main eventing with that. And it made it really tough for Dalton and Marty.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is why those matches aren't on this list. Okay. So we're in the top four.
Number four.
This is the match on this list that I think if you show me the list a year in advance, I would be most shocked at. This is a match that I thought was going to be terrible, and I was proven wrong. This is the highest rated tag team match on our list, and it is the team of Ronda Rousey and Kurt Angle against Triple H and his wife Stephanie McMahon at WrestleMania.
Too much of frustration she's taking out on Stephanie McMahon.
What a deal by Rousey!
Wow, talk about a shocker, man. This was it's funny how there's a lot of matches on this top 10 list that are matches we didn't think would be that great, but they exceeded our expectations, and this is the definition of that. This was a match where there was so much pressure on Ronda Rousey to perform well. This was her debut match in WWE. She's made it a point of saying this is not a one-off. Like, this is her job now. She is going to be a professional wrestler. And so there was a lot of pressure on her to perform well, to show that she could potentially be a face of the company, which is easily what WWE is looking for in Ronda Rousey. And she exceeded all expectations. She did have a good pillow around her. She had incredible people like Kurt Angle, Triple H, who are easily some of the best wrestlers ever. Stephanie McMahon was never a great wrestler, but she's an amazing character.
Yeah, she's a great storyteller.
Great storyteller, exactly. And I can't even break this match down because it was a long match, but like everything was just done so well.
you could have run this match 9 times, or you could have run it 10 times, rather, a nice round number, and it wouldn't have been this good 9 out of 10 times.
Yeah.
They really got everything to go perfectly. Mm-hmm. The audience, which, you know, got in really bad moods a lot that night, for whatever reason, decided that they were going to give this match a fair shake, which I'm really happy about. In the, you know, we've talked about this, that everybody that we know who was watching it in a room with people who maybe don't know wrestling as well, this was the match that made everyone stop whatever they were doing and pay attention. Mm-hmm. I hope that this is the beginning of something great for Ronda. The build for this match was not good on TV. In the mainstream, it was great.
Yeah, yeah. On TV, it could have been better. Yeah.
Yeah. But that didn't matter. In fact, I don't know if you saw that Ronda's next match has been announced.
I saw that. I have a lot of questions.
Yeah, I'm worried. I'm worried about it.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah. This is a match that this will be, I think, even though it's number 4 on our list and it's not a wrestling technical classic the way that a lot of these are. Actually, a lot of these ones are not, even if they're by people who are known for being like technical wrestlers, a lot of these are more slowed down storytelling matches. Mm-hmm. This match, I think, is going to be the most remembered match of this year.
I think so, because it's a match that held so much weight in that there was the perfect storm of a debut where she had all of this hype behind her coming in to perform well, and she exceeded those expectations. She was paired with a guy like Kurt Angle, who is already known as a guy who came in with all of these expectations, and in his debut excelled and exceeded those. He immediately took on to professional wrestling like walking, like he was immediately a top-tier performer. And right here, we've already seen Ronda Rousey was immediately a top-tier performer. And that's so great to see. And you have, like, all of the hopes in the world that she can be this, like, face of not only the women's division, but WWE going forward. And that's clearly the plan they have for her, so.
Yeah. It was awesome. It was awesome. This next match is also awesome. And this is the number 3 match.
Number 3!
Number 3. Don't cry, Tyler.
Oh, no.
This is a 60-minute draw from Dominion.
No.
This is Omega Okada 3.
Oh.
Two. I'm sorry.
Two.
10 seconds! Yeah.
Wow.
This is the number 3 match on our list.
Okay, call me a...
This was your number 1.
Call me an indie fanboy, call me a New Japan mark, whatever you want. This was, and a lot of people have said this, I'm not saying anything new, this was the best wrestling match I have ever seen.
Yeah.
I don't have anything else to say, it's the best match I've ever seen.
I don't want to talk down the people who didn't vote for it, because I think maybe a lot of our... I know a lot of our listeners are more WWE-centric, and it's easier to get into WWE
Absolutely.
If you're just starting.
Absolutely.
So let's use this as an opportunity to convince people to go watch this.
Okay.
Which you can find on Daily Motion anywhere. You voted this your number 1 match of the year.
Yes.
I voted it my number 2 match of the year, and it ended up at number 3. So that shows you that it didn't get a whole lot of support from our... Yeah.
And that could be a thing. Like New Japan is like the hot new promotion right now. It's hot on the internet wrestling community. But I mean, in terms of the mainstream professional wrestling audience, people who watch WWE, a lot of people either don't know what New Japan is, or maybe they've heard of it, but they don't even
they don't know how to find it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The New Japan World streaming app still isn't that accessible to
just gotta turn your Google on to translate.
Exactly. It's still not that accessible to the Western world, so I didn't even watch this like on the app. I had to again find it on the internet somewhere.
Yeah, I found it online. You can find this particular match really easily.
Yes, this one specifically because it has been heralded by many people as the best match of not only 2017, but again, like one of the best matches of all time. And so there's a few ground rules you got to go in. First, yes, it was a 60-minute draw. Now, to anyone who's not that into wrestling, I know that sounds real tough to watch.
I think that sounds like if you're going to see a movie and it's like, what are we seeing? It's like, we're seeing Ben-Hur.
Yeah.
We're seeing Lawrence of Arabia. We're seeing Gone with the Wind. It feels like, oh, we're going
to go in knowing that you're going to watch just two guys wrestle for an hour. You gotta go in with the right mindset. And this is a match where there was a good story set up leading into it, but it also, it's just the perfect match of in-ring storytelling of how these guys who are already coming in like a little battered, a little worn down, and how they each target each other in a specific way, and like how they're just giving it everything they can. My favorite spot of the entire match, a lot of people said it's also their favorite spot, where Okada is setting Kenny up for the Rainmaker, and this is Okada's finisher, where he basically grabs him by the arm and spins him around and then like clotheslines him. This specific one, this is like the third or fourth time Okada's gone for the Rainmaker. Probably about 40 minutes into the match, even longer. And he spins Kenny around, and Kenny literally just collapses from exhaustion. And Okada throws his Rainmaker, but since Kenny collapses, he misses, and like he himself goes flying forward. And it seems like such a simple spot, but like it's an incredible storytelling device of this, that both of these like warriors are just so exhausted, and like it was so good.
it is a three-act play where each 20 minutes tells a very specific story.
We pride ourselves on trying to relate wrestling to theater on this podcast, and there is no better match than this one to do that. It is a three-act play of ups and downs and storytelling and drama. It is
So I'll say that the first act is my favorite, actually. It's the, you know, you see people in wrestling, usually the bad guys, usually the heel, will work a limb, where they'll pick one limb and work it. And this is the best I've ever seen it, where Kenny just continues to destroy Okada's left leg for the first 20 minutes. And he adjusts his offense to do so. There's a really simple maneuver that looks devastating because of this, and it's the springboard dropkick to Okada's leg. Is like really early on in the match, and he's already worked it for a while, and Okada crumbles, and this match looks like it hurts. And there's been precedent. There's been 60-minute draws before, but normally they are a bit more lumbering. They're a bit more like Ben-Hur or you know, these long movies. This is more like Wolf of Wall Street, and that's also a very long movie, but it's action the entire time.
It's
and
wild.
Just like people acting a fool. Yeah, and this match, it's stunning the stamina on these two guys because they are moving at a quick pace the entire time. Mm-hmm. And there are little things about New Japan that make this match better that you won't see in WWE TV, which is the Bullet Club like coming out ringside, and they all play a great part of having really great facials and like kind of showing the audience how they should react to every near fall. And the overhead like announcements, they're saying how much time has elapsed.
I love that about New Japan. That's such a great something you don't even think about, but it adds to the anticipation of it so well.
Because the WWE instead would put a timer up on the big screen so that the audience knows, but the wrestlers tend to not look at the screen as like a kayfabe thing. And here, you know that the wrestlers are hearing how much time they have left. It's to continue on with the movie metaphor, it's very similar to the sequence, Hitchcock's best sequence in Notorious, where they're showing the passage of time through how many champagne bottles are being opened and how our heroes are running out of time to do the very specific dangerous thing they're trying to do. And that is the same feeling I get watching this match. That's a really, really deep cut reference.
I like
it. But this is the Hitchcock's Notorious of wrestling.
I doubt anyone has made that comparison, but I like it.
No, I hope that now that's what makes our show is like, oh man, you hear those guys who are talking about New Japan like it was Hitchcock. Yeah. We should teach a course at a community college about that.
Well, I mean, I don't have anything else to say. It was the best match I've seen. Moving on, number two. Yeah.
Number two is very similar in style to the match that we just talked about. It's just on a condensed time limit, and it's a match that had no build whatsoever and nothing really expected of it, that won over an audience and stole a show. And this is from NXT TakeOver Chicago. Our number two match is Pete Dunne, the Bruiserweight, against Tyler Bate. For the UK title, I should say as well.
Amazing match, this one. I think this was maybe in my top five. It might have been number five. This was a great match. It was, again, another match where when we heard it was happening, we were like, oh, I'm sure these guys are going to put on a pretty good match. It'd be pretty entertaining. And they just stole the show, like this match. And it wasn't a very long match. It was, I'd guess,
like
15-20 minutes tops. But man, it was just so good in all the spots. I think this is my favorite match of the crowd made this match. It was a good match, but had that specific crowd and that specific feeling that they had watching this match not been there, I don't think it would have been in match of the year questions.
Like, yeah, the match was 15 minutes and 27 seconds. That's way shorter than I thought it
was. That's so short. But yeah, I mean, this crowd made that match. They were so into all the spots. One of my favorite spots in this entire match, one of my favorite spots in any match, is Tyler Bate doing the airplane spin. This is a very old school wrestling move that it's now done. Today, you usually only see it in a comedic aspect where it's supposed to be something kind of funny. Not that
Cesaro's swing is really similar.
Not that it was like a devastating move back in the day, but it's basically the Tyler Bate, he picks Pete Dunne up on his shoulders in a fireman carry and just spun him around in circles. But there was a point where this was the fastest airplane spin I had ever seen. He was spinning so quickly. It was wild.
My favorite spot sequence in this match was Tyler Bate comes out of the corner and does a running standing shooting star press, which is caught by Pete Dunne, who puts him in a MMA arm triangle, and then he holds that for a while, and then Tyler Bate picks him up and power bombs him, and those are all things that we've seen before in wrestling, but they put those three together in a way that I don't think I'd seen before. Yeah. This I'm going to reference it to an older rivalry. This felt like a Rob Van Dam, Jerry Lynn match to me. In that those are two guys who had amazing chemistry and wrestled each other over and over and over. And they have the same moves they do every time, but the order that they do them is different, or the like which ones get reversed and which ones don't is different. And Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne have wrestled three times this year now on WWE TV. And again, it's like a lot of the same moves, but each match is a little different and subverts your expectations for like, oh, I know how this spot goes, and then they twist it a little bit.
And I think that's a great comparison where for the WWE audience, like the matches of Tyler Bate versus Pete Dunne are still relatively new, but you like knowing the backstory, these are two guys who have been wrestling each other for the better part of a decade. So they are so familiar with each other's movesets. They're so familiar in the ring that
And they're both so young. That's the craziest part, too.
Oh, my God. That I'm sure for them, you know, this was just another day. I mean, they've probably wrestled hundreds of times, and, like, this is just another day. But in that environment, with that crowd and that match that they built, like, man, it was a masterpiece.
Well, speaking of masterpieces, we only have one more match left, our number one match.
Number one!
This was ranked as your second favorite match.
Mm-hmm.
It was ranked as my first, and it was overwhelmingly picked by our listeners as their favorite match.
And I would have to say, this match on any other, like, top 10 on any other year, this would have been my number one, but just because it happened to be in the same category as Okada Omega,
yeah,
it wasn't, but incredible.
This is as close as we get to a consensus, I feel like, where everyone agrees. The number one match of the year, Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns from WrestleMania. That's not what the match is. Number one. Well, you'll be like everyone who was at Backlash if you walk out. The number one match was from NXT TakeOver Philadelphia, and it was for the NXT title. It was Johnny Gargano versus Andrade Cien Almas.
Inverted tornado DDT by Almas. Is it enough?
That's it.
The yes chance. And tonight here, Chapter 3 is another one between Gargano and
here we go.
The champion.
Oh, the
new champion.
Oh, come on.
Gargano wasting little time. He is running on fumes. Almas on the verge of tapping.
He's
unbelievable. Almas looking for that draping hammerlock DDT last time. Oh, my
God.
We were there live for this match. I don't think that that actually was like a bias for us. I think that we have been affirmed that this match was as good as on TV as it was live.
Yeah. It was incredible. And it was one of those weird things where we were there live watching it. And I think for me personally, as I was watching it, you get this sense of like, man, this is a good match. This is a really good match. And as it keeps going, it keeps getting better and better. You're like, wow, this is a really good match. At no point did I think like we were watching a five-star classic, like a match of the year or something like that. But in retrospect, in hindsight, you're like, wow, like what I just witnessed was something special.
Yeah, it's just like life. You don't realize that you've already lived the best moments.
And here we are on Much Ado About Wrestling. We're going to slow things down.
We're going to slow things down. Really talk about life. Long distance dedication. I kind of had a feeling that this match was going to be special, not when we walked into the building, not even during the rest of the show, but when they did the special entrance for Almas.
Got the La Sombra entrance, yeah.
Got me hyped, and I was like, oh, he's arrived. Like, we care about him now. He, you know, last year was a terrible year for him.
Yeah.
And this year was one of the best, like,
couldn't have been better.
I've ever seen. Yeah. The entrance was amazing, referencing his former character. It was another night where it felt like a title change probably should have happened. And it's fine that it didn't. It didn't really take anything away, but it made every near fall feel important. It was a great technical match, but the few moments where they had interference were fantastic. And Zelina Vega is amazing.
Oh yeah, she's the best manager right now in my mind.
She was the best manager of the year for me. If we did a top 10 on that, she would have been
number one.
We don't have the time for that.
Paul Heyman's number two. Just because I don't see Paul Heyman doing a hurricane run off the aprons.
I don't think I want to see that.
It was definitely a Matt classic. You can tell that these two are technically just amazing in the ring. But again, those stereotypical professional wrestling spots where you have interference or distracting the ref or something, like they were perfect because they made such perfect sense in the moment.
Also, all the best people from NXT were working this match, in that Drake as the referee is their best referee. Mm-hmm. Mauro went nuts on commentary, which we didn't get to hear live, but rewatching he was great. Candice was great in this match. Mm-hmm. Everyone was it was in like an all-star performance.
Definitely top tier. And like, it was, again, it was an amazing thing. Like, going into this, this was not the match I was most hyped for. I was most hyped for Adam Cole versus Aleister Black. I was like, man, that's
a match that almost made our list,
which is a great match in itself. And after that match ended, I was like, man, I don't know how they're going to top that. And then we saw this 5-star match. Like, it was, yeah, it was great. My favorite part about this match is the idea that this match, it really put Almas on the map as like a true contender and like someone who can excel. We like, if you know his previous wrestling as La Sombra, like, you know he's great. You know he's he can be the top level. And he was really just floundering at NXT for the longest time. And then he won the title, which kind of felt like a shocker for everybody. But this match solidified it. It was like, he deserved to be the champion.
Yeah, I agree. Where I thought he was a transitionary champion, I thought they literally just needed to put it on a heel so that they could
so
give
Gargano
the title
take it.
To Johnny, so that Johnny versus Ciampa would be the WrestleMania weekend main event for the title. Because we talked about, you know, the title match should end the night, and that is the logical storyline to end. And they had the correct foresight to trust in Almas that wouldn't matter, and they were right. And he's not a huge guy, but Johnny made him look like a monster in this match. And in turn, Almas was so good at playing a jerk that he constantly underestimated Johnny, which then made his offense look believable. And like, I wouldn't have pictured them as having the chemistry that they had going in, but now in hindsight, it's like, oh yeah, of course, they are quite great opposites for each other.
Yeah. And then you have Johnny Gargano coming out of this match, coming out of the match to take over New Orleans, proving that he's possibly the best wrestler in the company right now. I mean,
well, we'll see if he's possibly the best. Unless you have some closing thoughts on our matches, we're already way over time. We should hop into our top 10 wrestlers.
I'm glad that was the top match. It deserved to be, you know, not my number one, but it definitely deserves it.
Yeah. A reminder that for all of you who voted on the matches, we are going to be giving away some prizes to one of you. By the end of this podcast, if you haven't been emailed about it, then you probably didn't win. Mm-hmm. So you should hope that whoever I do email, that maybe they like don't check their email and don't get back to me. And then maybe...
And then we'll have to pick somebody else.
Yeah.
That's going to do it for part one. As a reminder, come back again on Friday to hear part two, where we're going to go over the top 10 wrestlers of the year as voted on by you and us and everyone we know. And we will be giving away one more prize package, including a subscription to the WWE Network, some t-shirts, some literature, a bunch of swag. So check back again on Friday morning for part two. Thanks for listening.